Session number 12243, Captain De Courcy Island, Reel 3.
Captain De Courcy Island, Reel 3. We're talking about your time on the Bellerophon. And one thing that you mentioned was the age range, which was
large. Yes.
And also in the thing in the book, you mentioned bullying.
Yeah.
What form did the bullying take, and how prevalent was it?
Oh, it wasn't very prevalent, but in the gunroom in those days, the junior midshipmen, who did most of the dirty work, we used to have what they called evolutions. The sub of the mess was a little despot, if you know what I mean. I mean, that was most of them rather like that. I think perhaps they had to be, because we were a very lively crowd, given their scope. Periodically we used to have these evolutions, by which I mean that you had to carry out certain things. For example, if the sub of the mess put a fork in the beam, that means that you had to clear out of the mess, because they were going to talk about something which they didn't think they should talk about in front of you. Another thing was providing bumf. That, when you provided bumf, you had to rush off to the heads, get a piece of service toilet paper, which was a little square, a brown square, like that, you see, and produce it uncrumpled back to the sub. Well, that meant, say, you had to run off to the heads of some distance away. I can remember doing that on one occasion where I was in a bit of a hurry, and I rushed into the officer's heads and grabbed hold of the roll of bumf inside, and unfortunately the paymaster commander was on the throne and I left him without any paper. So I not only got, and then you see, the first home in the gunroom got a glass of port, and the last home got a beating. You see, I got a beating both for both things. looking back, it's all very funny, but we used to do all these. There was another thing I can't remember quite what it was. It was called Creeping for Jesus. Big for Jesus, but I can't remember what it was. But there were these evolutions, you see, which was to test your speed, your intelligence, etc., you see. And they'd hold these evolutions, the sub and the senior midshipmen, you see, and the junior midshipmen would carry out these orders, which would be snapped out, you see. and generally, the prize would be a glass of port for the first who completed it, to their satisfaction, and a smack on the backside for those who were last. And I suppose you might have called it a form of bullying to a certain extent, but I think the idea, I suppose, theoretically, was that it smartened you up and made you quick.
Would the senior officers, or more senior officers, know what was going on?
Oh yes, they'd all been through it. And of course, like all senior officers, they always said, of course, in my day it was far worse. But they always told us everything like that.
Was there any actual, I mean, the sub-lieutenant, was there any actual picking on perhaps slower or less bright midge.
Yes, I suppose there was to a certain extent, yes, yes.
Did they all stand up to it all right, or did some... I mean, could you fall by the wayside? Were you allowed to...
You could fall by the wayside.
How would you... You could leave, then?
Well, for example, I'll tell you one thing, that not in the Bellerophon, but in a sister ship, there was a cousin of mine called Collingwood. And he had his arm broke. He broke his arm somehow during an evolution. And his parents withdrew him. And many years later, he was a very rather a scholarly type, and rather small, and he couldn't take it, really. Many years later, I met him. We had a term dinner. We used to have term dinners. We used to get together. Those who were in home waters would get together in London and have a term dinner at some pub, you see. And I remember going to a pub, or club, I think it was, where we were having the term dinner. And I was early, and there was a little chap, rather a bald head, standing in front of the fireplace. And I looked at him and I said, I beg your pardon, but I think this room has been booked for the Grendel term dinner. And he said, yes, I know. And I said, well, you know, it has. He said, my name is Collingwood. And then I jumped to it, you see. And at that moment, the secretary who was running the thing came in. And I said, this chap Collingwood's here. He said, good God. He said, do you know who he is? And I said, well, he was in our term. And he said, well, he's the senior wrangler in mathematics at Oxford, and he's Lord Lieutenant of the Northumberlands. he was the type that didn't exactly fit in with David, you see.
Now, the evolutions you described, that's very... I can't imagine how you'd break an arm running to the head, but were there some more complicated...
Well, I don't always tell the story, but it wasn't because I wasn't in the ship. But there was a midshipman in the Bellerophon before me who couldn't take it and tried to commit suicide. And all he succeeded in doing was that he blinded himself. But that is a fact, but I don't usually talk about it very much. But that did happen.
So some of these evolutions were quite stiff.
Oh, they were.
Do you remember any of the more difficult ones? Of, you know, rather than just running to the head.
Quite honestly, I don't. No.
You don't know what sort of things they were? I'm just trying to...
They were pretty rough. They were pretty rough, some of them. I don't think... I think that was fair. I don't think we were exceptional in that way. I think some ships were worse than we were.
Now, what effect do you think it had on your character growing up in that sort of environment? Do you think it had...
I just accepted it. That was... I think I said just fortunately rather of a philosophical nature, and I just took it. And I found that if you took it with a smile on your face, it made a lot of difference.
Now, the daily routine in harbour.
Yeah.
How was the day divided up for you as midshipman?
Well,
were you in watches?
We used to keep midshipman watch at sea. At sea, you were very often on the bridge, and you were always on the bridge. Some of you would concentrate on signalling, you're running the signalman. Others of you were more or less a messenger, really, that sort of thing. You'd write up the log for the officer watch and all that sort of odd jobs like that.
that would be at sea. We might as well, while we're
That would be at sea. In harbour, generally the midshipman of the watch, apart from running messages like tell the commander that so-and-so this is happening or that sort of thing, you ran the boat routine, called away the, saw the boats, called away and manned properly and sent on their job, whatever it was. That was quite a big part of it. That sort of thing. And you were the dog's body for the officer watch.
Now, how was the day actually divided?
It varied, you see, because you shifted around your jobs to a certain extent. We also were supposed to have instruction.
No, what I mean is, were you in proper watches, as the sailors would be, through the night and day, or was
well,
day?
In harbour you didn't do a night watch. I think we came off at 10.
So what would you if you could look at your daily routine in harbour then, what time about would you get up?
Well, you get up more or less with the hands, you see. And we used to scrub decks or supervise the sailors scrubbing decks. You usually scrub decks a bit yourself.
You'd actually help them?
Oh, yes.
How were they scrubbing decks at that time?
Well, the decks are teak decks, you see. And they just had scrubbers, holy stones, polishing brass, that sort of thing, cleaning paintwork.
Did you polish brass during the war?
Oh, yes. But we didn't have very much, not that showed, you see.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, not that showed. Oh, no, everything had been painted over. Then we ran boats, you see. That was a big part of it was a big part of my life on board the Bellerophon. You were supposed to be under instruction running the picket boats for a bit, and then you took over. There was a coxswain, you see, and a crew, and you had your own boat, the two big picket boats and other pinnaces and so on, and you did a period. Took in periods to run your boat. I did a lot of boat work because I got on very well with the coxswain.
Who was your coxswain?
This petty officer Halloran.
What was he like?
He was a smallish man, Irish, like a great many. We were a West Country ship and we had a lot of Irish who came over from Ireland to Devonport and joined the Navy. A lot of Irish. A lot of the stokers were Irish. He was Irish. He was a smallish man, very quiet, but he was what I would call a born leader. Not intellectual at all. I mean, I know for a fact that he'd have never passed the examination for a petty officer, but they made him one because he was such a good leader.
What qualities did he have?
Quiet, but knew his job backwards. And the sailors knew where they were with him. He's absolutely fair, absolutely square. And we have a very good team, and he taught me a hell of a lot.
Now, how many would there be aboard the picket boat? Would be him and you?
There'd be a stoker mechanic running the engine, a barman, and a stern sheetsman.
And what exactly?
You started under his instruction, and then you took over.
Now, what exactly was there to learn about running a picket boat then? What technically were you?
They were fairly powerful boats, and we did endless trips to taking people from one ship to another, correspondence, stores, that sort of thing. Scarpa Flow is not exactly a mill pond. most of the time, it may be a lovely place to spend a summer holiday, but on the flow, running a picket boat, it was pretty good hell, particularly in winter. It was very rough, for one thing, and you got very wet. And they weren't easy boats to handle. They're powerful boats.
What was difficult? I mean, how did you handle? What was the secret that he was trying to get across?
Well, you see, going alongside a ship, for example, going alongside the gangway, there'd be probably quite a heavy send. That means the boat's going up and down like this, you see. Also the ship would be yawing in the wind, like that. So it took quite a lot of judgment, and when to reduce speed, when to stop, when to go stern, and so on, you see. Give the bowman a chance to get hold of the boat rope, and the stern sheetsman to hold on to the gangway, and that sort of thing. It took a lot of learning, and quite a lot of handing.
Was it a theoretical skill, or was it really a practical skill?
Practical.
So it was practice that made you good at it, rather?
Practice that made you good at it. And generally speaking, you either did or you didn't. And if you didn't, what would happen is you'd probably come up under the gangway, or you'd hit something, and then there'd be damage.
Did that ever happen to you?
It did. When I first started, I remember I made a bosh of coming alongside when I was trying to do it myself, and we damaged the strake in the gangway, and we damaged the bow of the boat a bit. And I remember it particularly because before I could, when we got secured, before I could do anything further, a haller had lipped up the gangway to the officer of the watch. And the commander had also arrived on the scene, and so it was entirely his fault. And I think that you definitely it wasn't, but he was that sort of chap.
You must have very much appreciated that, because you'd have been in for a beating.
Oh yes, I'd have been masthead probably. Yeah. Then you see, we used to man the boat. If your boat was called away, you manned it either from the boom where it was laying, or sometimes it came alongside. If it had been away somewhere else, it came alongside and you manned it as the gangway. Generally, you manned it as the boom. Well, they'd be out, the boom sticks out from the side of the ship like that. And then there's the Jacob's ladder, which hangs down like that. And to get into your boat, you work your way along the boom on the jack stay, which you put your feet in the jack stay and hold onto the boom like that. Get up, work your way along, get onto the Jacob's ladder, go down there, and the boat will be doing this,
up and down.
Up and down. When you get to the bottom of the ladder, you jump. And if you're lucky, you just land on the bow. Generally, the bowman standing there holding onto a stay would be there ready to grab you. But that's how you ran the boat. And if you fell in, no, that was just too bad.
Would many people fall in?
One or two went very clever. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, it happened every time.
Would you be wearing life jackets for boat duty?
We were supposed to. Put it that way.
That would imply that you didn't always.
No, because you see, by the time you'd got, if you put a life jacket on, by the time you've got your oil skins on, you see, or sea boots, leather sea boots, and then oil skins, and a sou'wester probably if the weather was bad. Well, it was a pretty uncomfortable sort of setup.
Now, that was duty as a picket boat. Now, in your book, you differentiate between when you were duty steamboat. Now, what
Well, it was a steamboat, you see.
No, I mean, but when you were on duty.
Oh, when you were on duty, yes, that's right. There was a, every now and then, each ship provided a picket boat for what they call duty steamboat. And that involved all sorts of things, extras. You were on, pretty well on, continuously every 24 hours. You got the bigger jobs. All round the place you went. Then we used to, we'd sometimes go off to, we might have to go into the other parts of the floe, you see, where the destroyers are berthed. And then we used to take the messmen right across the floe to what we called the North Shore, when they went ashore to buy stuff from Kirk Wall, and eggs and food, and stuff like that. And that was pretty well a sort of, that we liked that, because that was, you got away from the everything and had a sort of day off, because he used to lie there while they did all their shopping, and then it took them time.
Now, the one thing that was quite an interesting story was the story of a dispute that O'Halloran had with a Marine officer, Field, I think his name was.
That's right, Penny Field.
What was that all about? I mean, you can't really have disputes with officers, can you?
Well, he was a young Marine subaltern, griddling, tall chap, and Marine subalterns used to have to take their turn as officer watch in harbour, learning how to be an officer watch in harbour. Well, he hadn't got much organising ability, as you might say. He was a bit of a drip. And he used to run the routine very poorly. He was very slow in learning, and I suppose he was pretty inexperienced. At any rate, on this occasion, I think I wrote about, he sent us away on a trip. We'd been on a long trip, and we were pretty wet, and got, we came back just before the dinner hour, and he'd forgotten to give us some letter which had to be taken to the flagship. But it wasn't at all important, nothing, it was just a routine thing. And so he said, you've got to take this letter over to the flagship. Well, it was 12 o'clock. And if you're a good officer of watch, you don't unnecessarily send a crew away just as the dinner hour. Because A, you miss getting their tot. And secondly, by the time they get back, the dinner's cold, you see. And this had happened before. And we didn't think very much of this. The subaltern and Halloran for the first time. He lost his temper, and he shouted up to the officer watch, "You might tell the fucking cook to keep my fucking dinner hot." And unfortunately, the commander happened to be standing up there doing something and overheard. You see, well, that was it. So I knew he'd been for the high jump.
Would Field have reported him on his own?
I don't know. He might have. I don't know whether he would or not. But at any rate, Halloran had put in the commander's report and then straight on the captain's report. And I thought that was the end of everything. He had a wonderful record. I'd seen his service certificate. A wonderful record. And at any rate, he was taken down before the captain. And the captain looked at his service certificate and said, "Well, you've got a wonderful record, but I can't overlook this." And I said, I wasn't allowed. They wouldn't let me give evidence. That was the only time the commander was really quite friendly to me. He said, no, boy, I don't want you there. At any rate, so I wasn't allowed there. At any rate, after it was over, the boat was called away, you see, on some job. And there was O'Halloran, brought it up to the gangway and that sort of thing from the boom. And not a word. It didn't show any sign of anything, you see. So we went away and I waited till we were real clear of the ship and I said, well, what happened? Oh, he said, the old man, that would be the captain. Oh, he said, oh, you know, when he said, Halloran, you've got a very good record, but I can't overlook this, you see, and all that sort of thing. And he said, I must give you a recommend. And so I said, a recommend? Or he said, it was some word like that. And I said, couldn't have been a recommend, Halloran. Well, he said, the jaunty, that's the master at arms, said, recommend it, on caps, about turn, quick march, you see, and off I went. And I said, well, I think he gave you a reprimand. Or he said it was some word like that. That was that story. And then Fanny Field became a general in this. So I must have learned something.
Would Field be reprimanded? I mean, it was in a way, Field was in the... I mean, often officers are
yes.
punished themselves.
Because Halloran said that the captain's coxswain, who was a friend of his, was near the defaulters' table, you see, and he said he left the door open a crack from his pantry so that he could hear what was going on. And he said that when the captain had given his decision, he said, Mr. Field, I want to see you in my cabin. And he said, and when he came out again, he said he was just about the same colour as Jack Dusty, as the bay chief maker. So I think he got torn off a strip all right.
Right. The other thing about, I noticed, that you were actually responsible for the picket boat as well.
Oh yes, yeah.
What did that entail?
Always had to when they were either left at the boom all night if it was I'm talking about harbour if it was decent weather. Otherwise we hoisted them in with a crane. We had a big boat crane, and the midshipman's always responsible for that. And you were responsible for the cleanliness of your boat. You always had to be there, and it was hoisted in, hoisted out, that sort of thing.
So that was one side of your work.
Yeah.
Were you under instruction for anything else?
Yes. We had an instructor of talent who'd been appointed. The naval padres used to do instruction at one time. They were both schoolie and padre. But we had an instructor of Tunt who was supposed to instruct us. Well, he was a teacher, but he was quite near to the Navy. And we used to sit down for instruction. And then if any bugle went, we took it in turns. One of us would jump up and say, oh, that's my boat called away. You see, and then off you went. It was a long time before you tumbled to this racket. So I must say our instruction was pretty poor.
What was he meant to be teaching you?
He was meant to be teaching us, oh, I think things like navigation, taking sights, mathematics, that sort of thing.
So theoretical things.
Theoretical stuff.
What about gunnery? Were you actually under instructions of gunnery?
Oh yes, we used to do gunnery instruction under either a gunnery officer or one of the GIs. Oh yes.
Now I know that we'll come to it later. Later on, you were in Q turret.
Yeah.
Your job was in a Dumaresk. But what were you actually instructed on while you were in harbour? I mean, what? Would you start you off with the 6-inch or whatever?
Oh, yes. Gun drill. All the parts of the gun. Loading, unloading, everything.
And you went right through all the weaponry?
We went right through the weaponry. So you carried torpedoes. That sort of thing. You had fairly fairly intensive practical instruction.
So you were meant to know everything, every part of the job on every
weapon? Oh, yes, and you had to learn a lot about the ship, too.